Hey everybody, Shane Pressley here, Rock Paper Podcast. I am super excited to welcome Freddie D'Angelo Studios to the show. They are now a proud sponsor, and if you don't know Freddie D'Angelo Studios, they are a full-service media production company based out of St. Louis and serving clients worldwide. Where if you can dream it, they can create it. Check out FDS all over your social media. You can get involved with them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Check out freddiedangelo.com for all your video and photo needs. If you haven't met Freddie yet, you've probably seen him around shows or seen some of his work online. He's just been doing some amazing things with his camera. So get involved. Check it all out. Again, freddiedangelo.com.
Podcast is kind of like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
Hey, everybody. Shane Pressley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from Columbia, Missouri. Hanging out today with some of the guys of the K Brothers. Welcome to the show, guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Good to see you, Shane.
Yeah, you guys care to go around the mic and introduce yourselves for those listening?
Brian, I play upright bass and sing.
Jake, I play percussion and do a lot of shaker work and a lot of dancing.
Leg kicks. I'm Pat. I play the foot drums and the guitar, banjo, harmonica, and sing.
Yeah, man, I'm excited to be here. I've been up here a couple of times, a few friends around town. I was just up here recently with the Bernie sisters, who are good friends of your guys' as well.
And
But I've been trying to get more inclusive into the Columbia music scene here, because there's just like a lot of really cool stuff happening in town. So I'm just trying to document as much of it as I can. I'm glad to be here today and hang out with you guys. We got a brand new record to talk about. This is recorded the morning after you guys' big release party last night, some sold out show at Rose Music Hall.
Yeah,
let's talk about that.
That was incredible. We were not expecting a response like that. We thought we'd be doing good to sell it out at all, let alone in advance. And I don't know of a local band here in Columbia selling out a hometown show in advance ever. I'm sure that it probably happened at some point well before I came to town, but I think the fact that this happened, you know, speaks more to what you referenced in terms of like the resurgence of artists here in Columbia and the sort of local and regional music resurgence in mid-Missouri. I think it speaks highly of the health of that scene overall, and it's just really cool that this kind of stuff is happening. You know, and the Bernie sisters, you know, came onto the scene in a big way about a year ago, and they sat in with us for the first set, which was a really cool experience. And that was something that we've been talking about doing for months and months, and we just never really, you know, it was always the sort of thing where, oh, it's great, yeah, I just don't know when we'll have time. And this whole experience, really from front to back, releasing this album, you know, everything up to, you know, last night was a culmination of all the things that I know I personally really wanted to do, but just never felt that we had time to do them. And we got to a point with this where we were like, let's do all of it. I know it sounds crazy, but let's do all of it. Let's just try. You know, let's do a video. Let's, let's get this album done for once. Let's do a set with the Bernie sisters in the release show. And it was pretty nerve-wracking. The timing, timing's never easy when you have this many moving parts. And like, you know, we had originally planned on doing this all in the fall, and Jake and his wife Gretchen got engaged over the summer.
Yes.
Yeah, and you know, they wanted to get married in the fall, so we just kind of pushed all this back. Like, it's fine, you know, we'll do all of this like right after the first of the year, and then about the same time my wife and I found out that we're expecting a baby girl in March. So it's like there's so much going on in our lives right now. Yeah. And the idea of doing all this was seemed crazy, and it was crazy, but we got through it and we did it. And I'm glad we did. I'm glad we didn't trim any of the sort of big items off of our hit list. But this record itself was at the very top of that. You know, this process had been going on for so long that it found its way onto my bucket list. You know, like that's where this landed. It's like we started recording this album 4 years ago. Wow. The band had a completely different lineup. Michael Scambry was playing fiddle, Lauren Douglas was playing washboard, and Lauren moved to Arkansas. Mikey got picked up by Mountain Sprout and relocated down to Arkansas, and we all of a sudden found ourselves as a duo, you know. And we didn't really want to push the project any further in the studio without having a full band or without having a feel for, you know, what the new people would bring to the table and how that would affect our sound. So we just tabled the whole thing, and then we started on it again. And then at some point, Roger Netherton came into the picture, and I know for me and for my perspective on this kind of music, Roger changed everything for me, everything. And you know, it was so that the sort of realization that I had that we'll get into here in a little bit was so profound that we scrapped everything again and started over for a third time. And I, you know, despite all the, you know, the ups and downs of trying to get this project done, it happened exactly the way it should have, exactly when it should have, at the very perfect time when, you know, we have, you know, Jake, who I was in a band with years ago, the Hypnex, you know, we sort of lost touch for a while, and Jake came back into the picture, Roger came into the picture, Molly Healy, who also is in the Hypnex, you know, came back into the picture in a big way when Mikey left. And all of a sudden we just have this great, really cohesive group of friends working on this project and you know, carving the sound out. It just couldn't have happened at a better time. Yeah. And we, you know, it's just incredible. We sound totally different, like, right now than we did, you know, a year and a half ago. I'm really glad that it all happened the way it did.
Yeah.
Ultimately,
is like the perfect storm that everybody just really needed in their lives, it's just amazing that it has all come together at this timing. Everything was just stacked up, just and it had the right amount of time allotted to bring us all the way to this morning.
Yeah, and you know, everything was, you know, sort of a domino in that trail too. You know, Bussin Productions, Carl Bussin did our video for one of the tracks on the album, Find Your Love. it's just really odd to me that, you know, we met Carl at Jake's wedding. Carl did, Bussin' Productions does a lot of, like, you know, wedding pictures and videos and stuff like that. And I met Carl that night while we were loading up. And I knew that, you know, a video was something that we wanted to do, and we were sort of having problems coming up with an idea, and we didn't really have anyone pushing us to get it done. We're loading out, and Carl, the photographer, is like, "Hey man, check this out." You know, he introduced himself and he showed me a picture that he took from a show over at Logboat Brewery, and it was hands down the coolest picture of me that I have ever seen. And I was like, "Whoa, man." He goes, "Yeah, I got a couple more," and he sent them to me, and I just couldn't get over, like, how much I felt like his style of shooting really complemented our style of music. Like, he shoots a lot of underexposure stuff, a lot of black and white. It's very old school looking, and I was like, man, this guy's eye is, like, perfect. And I didn't know him up until that point. Well, a week later, I, you know, was like, "Hey, I want you to shoot the photography for our album, you know, and, you know, let me know what you charge, and let's just do it."
Yeah.
And he gave me a price. I agreed to it. 2 or 3 days later, he comes back and says, "Hey, would you have any interest in doing a video? I've never done a music video before. I'd really like to." And he sent me some of his footage, and I was equally blown away by his videography. Like, it was the same, you know, the same sort of vibe as his photography. And I was like, yes. And then all of a sudden we had him pushing this timeline and, like, asking for a date. When do you want to do it? And we were kind of forced to commit to it. And it was a lot of work trying to coordinate all of that. But we did it. We did it, and we got it done. And, you know, if we hadn't waited to do this on account of trying to make space in our lives for Jake's wedding and everything, that video never would have happened.
Yeah.
You know, and it just really speaks to, you know, how quickly all of this came together and how casually it did. So
yeah, that's such a cool thing too, like, just the fact that, like, yeah, like, you know, the being at the wedding, the networking that you met him and all this stuff, like, that's such a cool thing to be, you know, just meeting people at different, whatever events there are and stuff, you know, concerts and different things. I've met all kinds of people that come into my life, and then all of a sudden you realize why they're in your life, and that, you know, like, they all these things kind of come together, and, you know, it's a
serendipity.
Yeah, man, it's very cool. But yeah, that, for his first video, it crushed it. That video is beautiful, and, like, all those very, like, theatrical too, like, mm-hmm. just some of the, like, the I guess he used drones for some of those shots and stuff of the country and
things. Yeah. It ended up being a pretty tough day. We had a plan A, a plan B, and a plan C, like we do for every situation, you know. And if it were a beautiful day, we knew exactly how we were going to do it. We were going to do this song. You know, even the weather was going to determine what song we used. And, you know, I all told, like, I don't really feel like we were 100% committed to a particular song that as of the day before we shot it. Yeah. You know, we were like, well, I don't know. Let's decide when we get there. Let's wait, you know, let's see which song is going to be benefited the most by the circumstances surrounding the day. And as it turned out, we got freezing rain. Roger was sick, and he's in St. Louis, and he couldn't even make it. I don't know how Molly got there. She, you know, but she made it there on time, and we're all sitting in this shed, and we're like, "Well, Carl, can you get the drone out?" And he's like, you know, and he messed around with it, and I the props, like, the rain was, like, splatter water all in front of the lens. It's like, that's not gonna work, and we couldn't do this shot where Molly was supposed to go outside because we'd only get one, and she'd be playing out in the rain, you know. Anyway,
she had one shot with her hair.
Yeah, it's like you can have me outside for 3 minutes, and then my hair is gonna go flat. It's funny because I did not even consider that being an
issue. You're like, there's no redoing that unless you want to blow dry your hair.
No, yeah. So, you know, there was, you know, a lot of adversity that day, but we got through it, and it was great. You know, I wish we would have been able to spend longer on it, but we were on a time crunch, and, you know, I'm really sad that you know, we couldn't get Roger in there. Yeah. And on the, you know, we shot the pictures for the album that day too, so he had to get the old, you know, it's like the high school yearbook, not pictured,
right?
You know, but that's just unfortunately, that's just how it had to go. But yeah, that was a really cool experience. The release of that video was great. Yeah, I was really happy with, you know, with the final product, and Carl worked on and I worked on it really hard and coordinated the release of it and everything. And I think as it stands now, it has almost 28,000 views, and it's been up for a week.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah, and I mean, I haven't spent any money like boosting it or anything like that. It's all organic reach, which is amazing. I mean, we weren't expecting that kind of response, but it's cool.
Yeah.
You know, and this is a band, mind you, that has, for the last going on 6 years now, has done nothing but play show after show after show. People are like, do you have any music? Nope. Do you have any video? Nope. Do you have anything? We have shows. That's what we do. And, you know, it's not that we were trying to hold, you know, the sort of documentation of what we were doing back from people. We just didn't have time.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, well, I want to play, and I don't have time for anything else. And, you know, it was just really rewarding having actually checked both of those boxes simultaneously, mm-hmm. put them out there, and have, you know, the video be performing this well, have our CD release show sell out in advance. It's insane. I was not expecting that at all. I was not expecting to be answering message after message after message the day before the show and the day of the show going, sorry guys, like, right. I can't get you any tickets. Like, I felt horrible. Yeah, and if I had any insight that it was going to go this way, we would have done it at the Blue Note. We just didn't think that it was going to be that big of a deal.
Mm.
But it was, and that's cool, and I'm really excited for, you know, for us to have now two sold out shows in that room within 3 weeks.
Yeah,
I'm excited for the, you know, the local scene to in general to have, you know, local shows selling out like this too. It's really cool, and we're excited to be a part of that.
Well, if anybody missed out in Columbia, there's two more chances to. And come to St. Louis or Kansas City, right?
That's right. We have this coming weekend on Friday, February 10th, we are playing at the Focal Point. And let's see, that show starts at 8. Tickets are $10 in advance, $15 at the door. Roger will be back in town for that show. He wasn't here last night. He's out on the East Coast recording a new album. But he will be with us in St. Louis, which is exciting, and we'll have the full five piece. Molly and Roger are not here with us today. They both play strings. Typically, Roger plays fiddle, and Molly will play either cello. She has this really cool, like, berry fiddle. It's a fiddle strung up with cello strings. She has a viola, and she also plays fiddle too. And the, you know, the five piece lineup of the band is what's represented on the record. It really is our best show. It's difficult to get, you know, all five people available, and we have this sort of interesting scenario where, so long as there's four of us, we'll play a show. You know, we've only been able to actually pull off, I think, maybe five piece shows ever, which makes the St. Louis show pretty exciting for us. And to be playing in Roger's home, you know, the Focal Point is very much Roger's backyard. So I'm really excited for that show. So yeah, that's Friday, February 10. And then we have our Kansas City release show it's Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday.
Yeah, it's Saturday, February 10. And then our Kansas City release show is Friday, Feb 16 at the Westport Saloon. It's a free show, and we go on at midnight. I mean, we're like midnight to 2 a.m. That's a fun place. We've only played there once before. We didn't really know what to expect. I just had a really good experience, you know, booking the show with Travis, and I really liked the vibe of the mm-hmm. place. And
yeah, the room's got great mojo.
The room's got great mojo.
It's kind of like a hole-in-the-wall cage.
It kind of reminds me of Rose Music. I felt very at home there, much in the same way that I do at Rose Music Hall. And we did a show there, and, like, we didn't know anyone there, and it was... I remember sound checking, and the people just all of a sudden just packed up to the front of the stage, and they're like 2 feet away from you. It was a little intimidating. I'm like, we were not expecting this at all, but the show was awesome. We had the best time we've had maybe ever playing in a new market for the first time, and love Travis, and we're excited to be doing that show there. So yeah, and then after that, we will be releasing the album online. It'll be available on iTunes and Spotify sometime after that Kansas City show, but certainly by the 1st of March.
Yeah. Well, you were saying you guys, you know, didn't have material. You played shows all the time. And I imagine, like, playing all the time helped get you guys, like, you know, really well prepared to go into the studio when you went to cut these songs and stuff like
that. You'd think that, wouldn't you? You know, that's a double-edged sword because, you know, what you hear when you play is not necessarily the same thing that other people hear. And it probably the most just hilarious element of us going in the studio and recording was, like, finding out that, you know, Brian and I aren't playing the same thing at this part. We're like, what is going on here?
It's
like,
what? Everything comes to light.
Yeah. It's like, you thought you'd go to the four there. I'm like, no, dude, I go to the five. He's like, oh. Oops. You know, and, like, all of a sudden we're having to go back, and it's really enlightening, you know.
Like, you mean that was minor?
Yeah. Sure. That kind of stuff. But it's like, you know, we don't ever practice. We never practice. That's not something that we do.
We play so much, really don't have to.
Right. Well, yeah, except to the extent that, like, you know, when you're playing in a club at 1 o'clock in the morning, you don't notice that, like, one person's doing, you know, the sneaky, like, modal minor and the other person's not. You don't really notice that stuff in the moment. Late at night in a packed club, you do notice it in the studio. So we had to go back and I don't want to say had to. We had the opportunity to clean up a bunch of stuff that you know, really makes our live show better.
Harmonies especially. That's my favorite things about going in there is you're in there with cans on, and I'm not hearing it through a muffly monitor wedge. I'm hearing it on some crisp, clean studio headphones. I'm like, oh, and now I can hear what everybody's doing. Now I can really develop and advance some of the vocal harmonies and make them pop so much more, which really I thought was a big boost after going to the studio finally. Allowed me to really kind of change things I was doing to adapt better.
But, you know, we're you know, tinkerers to that end, so I mean, we could have gone in there and just set up live and blasted through the whole thing if and only if we could get Roger and Molly there at the same time, which, like I said, is very difficult to do. But no, we got in there and did everything, you know, one at a time, and then we agonized over everything like we do. And finally, at some point, we ended up with so many tracks in there that it was like, I don't even, like, it's fine, just leave it. You know, and just to sort of, to come back to, you know, Roger, like, Cumberland Gap, the first song on the record, was one of those songs where we got in there and it was like we laid down the banjo, we laid down the bass, I, you know, put guitar. I don't play, like, when we play it live, it's just bass, banjo, and fiddle as far as the strings go. But in the studio, I'm like, oh, I want to put some guitar in there. And I want to put a little mandolin in there. I want to put a little of this in there, a little of that in there. And at some point, it's like, holy smokes, like, there is so much going on in this song now, like, it almost gets difficult to mix. But that, you know, for a song like that, it really sort of highlights the kind of old-time vibe that that Roger brought to the table. And this was a big turning point for us creatively. Now, I'm totally speaking for myself here, but I thought that whenever I got into this kind of music that I liked bluegrass. I thought that, like, straight up bluegrass was it. I'm like, man, this is awesome. Like, it's accessible to people. It's fun to play. I love this music, but I kept getting hung up on, like, how similar every single song is. There's this very rigid structure, and, like, you know, real bluegrass players, you know, adhere to this model of, well, if you don't have a fiddle, a guitar, a mandolin, you know, an upright bass, if you don't check all of these boxes, then you're not a bluegrass band. Oh, you have drums? Well, you're not a bluegrass band. And I'm like, I don't think that that's fair. You know, I'm like, and that's not what I want. Like, when I listen to traditional bluegrass, that sound has never been the sound that I've wanted. There was something in it that I really, that really resonated with me. And I couldn't put my finger on it. And then, you know, one day I'm listening to, I come across this song, Cluck Old Hen. And I'm like, whoa, this is cool. This is a really cool bluegrass song. And I found like another song like that that we added in. Shady Groves is one of those songs too. You know, and I was like, man, these are cool. I wish we, you know, where do I find, I didn't know what to search for. I didn't know what distinguished those songs from the others. So we're playing, you know, fast forward to almost 2 years ago, exactly. We're playing St. Paddy's Day at Rose Music Hall. And Molly is unable to make it at the last minute. So we're about to play this big packed show without a fiddle player. And it was just daunting. I was like, oh man, how are we going to do this? And the band that opened up for us had a fiddle player. And one of the guys in the band was like, you guys need to check this kid out. Like, this guy is, he's the real deal. And he would do, you know, like, he would fit your guys' sound really, really well. Well, they played, you know, they played the set, and I was watching Roger play, and I was like, man, this kid is amazing. And they're packing up, and the guy that I talked to in that band camp said, you should just ask him to sit in. He'll sit in with you. I was like, oh, we have to. Like, we don't have a choice. Like, mm-hmm. like this needs to happen. And, you know, he's putting his fiddle down, and I said, hey, would you have any interest in sitting in with us? And he's like, sure. What songs do you play? And I was like, oh, man, it's just a bunch of, like, you know, bluegrass stuff. And he goes, oh, well, you know, bluegrass really isn't my forte. And I could tell that he was, you know, he may not think it's his forte, but he's definitely capable of doing it.
Right.
And he was like, well, what songs do you play? And I was like, I don't know, man. And I immediately went to, like, the song that I liked the most, Cluck Old Hen. Said, you know Cluck Old Hen? He goes, well, of course I do.
pot. Buckle chicken. Buckle hand. Buckle hand. Fucking sing. Ain't let it exit. Swear that's great. Buckle hand. Fucking squall. Ain't let it exit. Swear that's ball.
Said bluegrass wasn't your forte, and he goes, well, that's not a bluegrass song, that's an old time song. And a little light bulb went off, and difference? I was like, wait a minute.
old time
that's an old time. I was like, all right, let's do this show, you and I need to talk afterwards, you know. And we played the show, and the kid just crushed it. It was awesome. And you know, we're talking later, and this was a conversation that kept going on and on and on, and finally, like, it dawned on Roger that when he said old time, I thought he meant like old timey, like it was just an adjective. And he goes, no, Pat, you don't understand. Old time is a genre of music. It is its own thing. It is not bluegrass. This is what makes it different. And I mean, I just felt this huge weight come off of my shoulders. It was like, that is the music that I like. That's the stuff that I like. I didn't know that this existed. And all of a sudden it opened up all these doors. You know, there's all of this material out there now that I was able to find and listen to and gain inspiration from. And that really affected our sound, because it was at that point that what we were trying to do, like, in my mind, was okay. You know, it's a thing. It's a thing that has been done before, in so much that we're not totally alone on this. And, you know, we don't have bluegrass people going, oh, you guys aren't a bluegrass. Well, cool. We don't have to claim to be a bluegrass.
Yeah,
you know,
we
don't have to define ourselves that way. And there was a lot of freedom that came with that realization that definitely affected our sound. And, you know, having Molly and Roger both playing with us at the same time on songs like Shady Grove, for example, you know, that song has got this really cool, it's like a sword fight of fiddles through the entire thing. And we were in the studio and we're like, oh, let's just let them, you know, let's let them play through. And Will was like, yeah, cool. And we'll just sort of pick and choose what we want to use. And we ended up not taking out a single thing. And the whole thing is just, there's almost an agonizing tension to it that never fully releases. And it comes through in the most wonderful kind of way. But that's not a bluegrass thing. You know, that's more of an old time thing. Old time bands can have, you know, 10 fiddles. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't realize that was a thing. Not that I'm trying to play by the rules, but, you know, it was just really interesting to see that that was, you know, a thing that people do. You know, that the freedom that, that came with that realization, all the doors that it, that opened when Roger came into the picture, affected our sound in the best possible way at the best possible time.
Yeah.
And, you know, the whole album is a reflection of that. Even the, like the standard bluegrass songs on there don't sound like standard. They have this old time element to it where, you know, the fiddle is playing constantly through the whole thing. Old time is the way that I have come to understand it over the last year is really centered around the fiddle player. And everything else is in support of the fiddle. You can have an old time song and it's just a fiddle. You can have an old time song and there's 30 people playing. Bluegrass doesn't work that way. Bluegrass is like a, you know, a four-legged bar stool. You take one of the legs out, it's gonna fall down. Old time doesn't work that way. There's a center to the circle that's very important, and it really changes the way that it changes the whole vibe about the music. It changes everything about it. I really like the music where, you know, the fiddle is driving the song, and it's not this exchange of, you know, now we sing the vocal and everyone chucks, and then now we all sing the chorus together, and now we do a solo, and then, you know, we move to the chorus and I hand the solo over to the fiddle player, and then we start this process all over again that's like super redundant, you know. And it affected our arranging and how we approach our songwriting for, you know, all our original material, and it's been awesome to finally, like, to sort of finally wrap our heads around that after, you know, so many years of doing this.
Yeah,
so,
man. Well, that Cluck Old Hen, especially, like, and then there's a few of them, but I love the way, like, you guys are able to, like, play with, like, the dynamics of the songs and stuff, how, like, you know, you bring it down real low and then all of a sudden build it back up. And, like, there's times where in certain songs, even too, like, you guys just go down to, like, just the claps and stuff.
Yeah,
and, like,
yeah.
It's, like, it's just fun to see how the flows through the soul song and stuff, and, like, it's just a lot of fun for me.
You know, those sorts of dynamics are really important to us, and a lot of that is a result of experience playing live shows. You know, we definitely feed off the crowd. We're definitely paying attention to the crowd, and we try to be engaging. You know, we don't try to be a band that gets up there and just plays the song and the crowd listens. Like, we want the crowd to become part of the band. And we do a lot of, like, dropping out and with just the kick drum, mm-hmm. you know, driving and singing the songs together with the crowd singing. And we get so much enjoyment out of that, and mm-hmm. That we try to do it at every turn. So a lot of the, you know, dropping out and clapping and stuff like that is all very much a product of the experience of playing so many live shows and trying to sort of bring the crowd
right.
onto the stage and have them sort of join the band for the night, which is definitely, you know, kind of our RMO. When it gets to that, there's another element of this, and this was a huge learning experience for us being in the studio, that this band is all, like, there's, you know, volume dynamics and arrangement dynamics like you're referencing, but there's also a very big element of tempo dynamics that we utilize, and we recorded this entire album to a click, which we'll never do again, because it was so hard to track, because we do a push at every turn in the song, where, you know, when we go to a solo or like a solo section or a chorus, we nudge the tempo a little bit, and there are places in the song where we slow it down, you know, and
it's kind of like a slinky.
Yeah, it's kind of like a slinky, and it, not an uncomfortable one, but there's definitely an effect. And, I mean, it's just a sort of a product of having played so many shows that when we goose the tempo a little bit and people are dancing, they sense that all of a sudden they're behind, and they speed up, and they feel it.
Turn up the heat.
Yeah, uh-huh. It's turning up the heat. And they feel that it's speeding up, and because they're engaged, like, that becomes a really, really useful dynamic that we employ at every turn. And, you know, I used to have, like, other musicians, you know, sometimes kind of have mixed feelings about it. They're like, you know, one person's like, oh, man, that's really cool. You guys are constantly, like, firing the tempo up. And you have another musician just like, that Pat K just cannot keep a beat.
You know, one of my favorite things is when you push the tempo a little bit. It's usually when you're doing everything at once.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Molly looks at me and smiles.
Yeah.
She's like,
yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'll look over at Ryan and stuff and be like, you know, kind of giving some little fun eye contact. We're like, here we go.
Well, you know, I felt a moment of redemption a few months ago. A venue owner gave me a book about Bill Monroe, and like a biographical book, you know, and I'm reading it one night laying in bed, and I get to this part of you know, where he was crafting that original bluegrass sound, and he was getting into it with some people that had been in the band with him before that had gone out on their own and sort of claiming that these people are stealing my style. And there was a very short checklist of things that Bill found to be sort of profoundly his. And I think there were like two or three things on it. It was a very short list, but one of them was the quote, push. And I was like, what is that? And I started reading into it a little further and come to find out that's something that Bill Monroe did. And that was really a thing that he consciously did that he considered part of his unique style. Was that when they hit a solo, they pushed the tempo. And that moment, I was like, yes!
So you were doing it, it was happening naturally.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I had no idea that he did it. And I mean, I think a lot of people don't even realize, they're not really conscious that it's happening. But, and I wasn't even as conscious of it happening until we get in the studio and I try to record to a click and I'm like, what? Will, is this, it seems so slow. He's like, well, you liked it at you know, at downbeat. You know, we're 2 minutes into the song. I'm like, it's not right. Let's speed it up. And we'd start it over, and he'd speed the click. And I'm like, it's too fast here. Like, we're just fighting the click at every... Even just to get, like, the initial tracks down, it was just really hard. But, yeah, we'll never do that again. And there's a time and a place for it, though. You know, yeah. Songs like Find Your Love probably benefit from having some, you know, a stable tempo, but... Definitely these old time songs like Cluck Old Hen and like Old Bell Cow, songs like that rely, especially Old Bell Cow, you know, that song relies on the push, because that is one of the big dynamic elements of the song.
If you take my favorite parts of that, yeah.
Yeah, if you take the push out, it's like, it almost feels boring sometimes, you know, and like we were tempted to take that off the record and go back and re-record it, but we were too far down the road, and
the dynamics in that song really helped tell it. They go with the story.
Oh yeah. And there's this part of the song where, you know, I do the whole bit on, you know, this song's about that time of day when you gotta go out and feed that old bell cow, you know, and I do like the cattle call, and Molly answers it on the fiddle and makes like a cow sound on it, and sometimes she uses an octave, and we do this whole, you know, this whole joke about how it sounds like, you know, the cow's possessed. but you know, that there's a lot of stuff like that that aren't on the record that are key elements of our live show.
It's like pouring gasoline on the crowd, you know, kind of just coming into stuff and bringing the tempo down and all of a sudden lighting them up, and it's just like a little, you know, fire roars up, and it's awesome to see that, you know, dynamic, you know, as you're engaging, you know, with the people at the show and
makes
stuff,
it a lot
and
of
it
fun.
Just, yeah, well, it really makes you pay attention to everything and really try to capture the moment.
Yeah.
Well, you can't expect people to just stick with you while you're burning through songs. I'll just relentlessly all night long. You have to give people a break. We need a break.
Right.
People's ears need a break. And you know, if you don't do that, it does start to sound like, you know, the same thing over and over again. And, you know, there's some stuff on this record that are, you know, I think in terms of, like, contrast, one of the sort of outliers to the kind of median of the music offering in it is a song we wrote called Mountain Song. And it's more of a, it's just a kind of a slower, it's definitely the slowest song on the album, but it's a little darker, and it has some crazy like dynamics in it where it goes to like cut time and it gets like lightning fast and it drops out at like half tempo, and there's a bunch of cool stuff like that in that song. But that one, you know, that one has a cool story to it. That you know, when we were young, you know, deer camp was a big part of life in California, Missouri, during the winter time, and we'd all go out to our farm, and but it was like, you know, so the guys, our mother called it beer camp, and there were a few guys that didn't even bring guns. I think they just wanted to go out there and hang out and
cook food
and drink beer. Yeah, and there was a guy that came out every year, and I don't recall him ever going hunting, and he always stayed up all night. And when everyone would go to bed, I'd sit there at the table and listen to him tell stories all night, and until, like, you know, it was time to get up, and like I'd hear alarms go off and go running back into the, you know, the pull out bed and like throw the blanket over my head and act like I was asleep. But I'd stay up listening to that guy talk all night long, and he had these just the craziest stories, and they're all true. Like, I actually went back and asked around, like, yeah, that actually did happen to him. But it was insane. He had multiple terminal illnesses, and, you know, I think the doctor gave him, like, I remember at one point, 6 months to live. So Dad and all the guys threw this big party for him. They called it the Great Demise Party. Well, he didn't die. And at some point, they had the 10th annual Great Demise Party. This just kept going. I mean, you could not kill this guy. He's an old Vietnam vet. He was a detective with the sheriff's department. And
call him off of that line, and he
So Mountain Song is a sort of collection of each verse is kind of its own tall tale, you know, of, you know, wartime and you know, fast cars and all that stuff. But yeah, the stories are all true.
Yeah, it's what I absolutely love about that song on a personal level for me is my dad's a Vietnam vet. Mm-hmm. And you know, the stories, you know, in that song resonate with my relationship with my father and what he went through. And like, you know, even talking about, you know, the cars and stuff, he, right when he got back from Vietnam, he bought a brand new Firebird right off the showroom floor. And like, you know, so man, when that song is going on, it, you know, it kind of really resonates with me just as a person and my relationship with my dad and what he went through. So that's just, it's, you know, and I think other people can see that they're, you know, really paying attention to this song. They, it really hits home for some people.
Yeah.
The last verse of the song is about, and I was present for this. And it was the only part of the song, I think, that I actually, you know, bore witness to myself. But his house burned down in the wintertime one year. And I very acutely remember going out there with my dad and they had some a bunch of inmates from the jail doing work release out there, like helping pick up, and I think they may have even, I think they actually built the house too. I'm not entirely sure at what point, you know, the dividing line was there between like an actual contractor and everything, but you know, the point is, like, I remember being out there, and I remember I actually experienced that, you know, that last verse myself, and it was crazy. It was just so surreal, you know, in a small town to have someone that close to your family's house burned down and see, you know, people in orange jumpsuits, you know, working on the house and everything. And I actually, this coat that I have here is actually his, now that I think about it. This was something that, you know, the town kind of all got together and gave, you know, he and his family clothes and everything, because all their clothes burned.
Yeah.
And yeah, this was one of the coats that he had. I pulled it off the wall at the farm. Been hanging there for years on a nail.
Huh. Oh, yeah, it's a killer vintage flannel.
Yeah, that was, I think he wore it out there, and I'm not sure whether, like, one of the guys made fun of him, because it's a pretty loud colored coat. He's like, I'm not wearing this coat.
You know, and the first time you wore it, we were heading to a gig, and I jumped in the truck with you, and I was like, Pat, I kind of like what you got wearing on. And then he told me a story about it, and I'm like, seriously? That's awesome.
Yeah. But, yeah, so, you know, that, like I said, that song's sort of a collection of you know, stories I heard from that guy, and that's one thing that I really try to focus on in our songwriting, is that there, you know, we see crazy stuff you know, all the time, and there are some great, like, factual things that have happened and that we've witnessed that you just can't make up.
Right.
You just can't make up stories like this. Like, one of the verses, and this is something that he actually did. You know, I think he went and got, like, rip-roaring drunk before he shipped out and, like, wrecked his car coming from the laundromat. And he had all of his laundry and laundry baskets in the back of the car, and the car flipped over end and ended up, I think he was charging down a cul-de-sac or something. The car flipped end over end and ended up in someone's backyard, and he fled the scene, and he said that the last thing that he remembers was, like, his laundry that was in the back being up in the trees and stuff like that back there, you know? And I was just like, the visual of, like, you know, this young man who was getting ready to go to war, like, you know, that whole experience being, like, the sort of precursor to that was having this car wreck and
right.
It being in the dark and seeing all his clothes up in the streets and just running, just being like, what does it matter? You know, like who cares at this point?
Might,
you know,
I might back.
Not come back, mm-hmm. You know, and it, you know, so I think that kind of stuff, particularly those, you know, those tales from home are really important to us, and we, because they're real and they're from, you know, the ground beneath our feet. And we're very much a Missouri band. You know, anyone that's seen us play knows that we, you know, fly a huge Missouri flag as a stage backdrop, and we're, you know, we're proud to be from Missouri, and any element of that we can incorporate into our music, into our show, we try to take full advantage of. Yeah, like we, you know, some of the best music, particularly, you know, of the old timey variety is, you know, it really speaks to like how their lives were. And, you know, you listen to songs like Rabbit in a Log, and there's rabbit in a log, and I ain't got my dog. How will I get him? I know. I'm going to get me your briar, I'll twist it inside. Like, those are things that, like, you know, a total different, you know, planet, you know, of time and, uh-huh. and place of people would even think to say.
Uh-huh. You know, like, here so, in Missouri, that's still real life to a lot of people, and their yeah. experiences, what they do for, you know, being outside and enjoying
it. The point is, though, is that, like, you know, a lot of this stuff, like, make no mistake, we do it for posterity. You know, I want my children to be able to listen to it, my grandchildren to be able to listen to it, and, you know, I want, you know, 30 or 40 years from now for someone to be able to listen to this and think that it is as dated, I guess, in a good way, that, like, we look at some of those, like, old Bell Cow and songs like that. Like, I hope that people can look back at a lot of this stuff, you know, particularly our original stuff, and sort of have this cool, like, visual of you know, a time and place that is sort of bygone.
Like a story time capsule.
Yeah.
Well, you can pick up the record again at the Focal Point in St. Louis on February 10th and February 16th in Kansas City at Westport Saloon.
Yep.
And then physical copies available online. It's coming soon, too.
We'll have them available online concurrent with this going up on iTunes right. and everything. It'll be the end of February, very first of March.
Right. But yeah, I would highly encourage you to grab a physical copy. Like I said, you got all the artwork, all the pictures and stuff and all that. So it's nice to see, you know, I know everybody's going digital. Everybody wants to buy an iTunes and things, but I think the physical copy is where it's at. I mean, it's nice to have a tangible product, take something mm-hmm. home with you and stuff. So
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They're getting harder and harder to play though. Yeah. I realized the other day I went to stick one of the CDs in my laptop and right. had the realization that I've owned a laptop for 6 months that didn't have a CD right. drive. Yeah. And I was like, what the hell?
Yeah. Yep. But yeah, check out the K Brothers on Facebook and Instagram. Keep plugged in with these guys. And check out that video for Find Your Love. I thank you guys so much for taking some time out to hang and... Hopefully we'll do this again real soon.
Yeah, let's do it again. Thanks so much for having us, Shane.
Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much, Shane.
I'll see you guys soon. Thanks.
Thank you.
Hey, everybody. This is Shane Presley here with Rock Paper Podcast. I want to tell you about my friends over at Music Record Shop. Find them right here in St. Louis, Missouri, in the Grand Center area, in the Dot Zach building. Go over, check it out, come by and visit them. You can go by or visit online, shop 24/7 at musicrecordshop.com. Be sure to follow along with Music Record Shop on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. They're giving away tickets and records and all kinds of fun stuff throughout the day. So get involved, shop local, support local business. They got a lot of cool stuff going on. So you can also reach out if you have a local band you want to get your records on the shelf over there. Reach out and see how you can make that happen. Again, musicrecordshop.com.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Well, yeah, that was it.